In the drowsy heat of 1930s Alabama, three children dare each other to approach a weathered house that looms over their neighborhood like a question mark. Inside lives Boo Radley, a man who hasn't stepped outside in 15 years, a phantom who exists more in whispered legend than in flesh. Scout Finch, her brother Jem, and their friend Dill spend their summers obsessed with this mystery, inventing elaborate stories about the recluse who once allegedly stabbed his father with scissors. But what begins as morbid fascination becomes something far more profound, a journey toward understanding the difference between the monsters we imagine and the humans we refuse to see. The Radley Place isn't just a haunted house. It's a mirror reflecting Maycomb's deepest fear, the unknown other. Yet something strange happens as summer unfolds. Small gifts appear in a tree's knothole: chewing gum, carved soap figures resembling Scout and Jem, a tarnished pocket watch. Someone is watching, but not with malice. When Boo's brother Nathan cements the hole shut, Jem weeps silently, sensing cruelty he can't yet articulate. The children are learning their first lesson about prejudice. We fear what we don't understand, and sometimes that fear says more about us than about the thing we fear. Scout arrives at school already knowing how to read, a skill that earns her a scolding instead of praise. Miss Caroline, armed with newfangled teaching methods she barely understands, insists Scout unlearn her abilities and start fresh. The absurdity stings. Being punished for knowledge, for curiosity, for the very thing education should nurture. Each evening, Atticus and Scout continue their reading ritual, a parallel education that teaches more than textbooks ever could. Here, Scout learns not just words, but wisdom. How to climb into someone else's skin and walk around in it, how to recognize the difference between social performance and genuine character. When she explains Maycomb's complex social hierarchy to Miss Caroline, why Walter Cunningham won't accept lunch money, why Burris Yule attends school only one day yearly, her teacher dismisses these insights. Real education comes from paying attention to life itself, from watching how your father treats people, from understanding that empathy matters more than multiplication tables. Mrs. DeBose hurls racist insults from her porch as the Finch children pass. When Jem destroys her camellia bushes in rage, Atticus sentences him to read to her every afternoon for a month. After she dies, Atticus reveals she spent her final weeks breaking morphine addiction, using the reading sessions to extend time between doses. "I wanted you to see what real courage is," Atticus explains, instead of getting the idea that courage is a man with a gun in his hand. Courage takes many forms in Maycomb. Atticus sits alone outside the jail facing a mob. Scout unknowingly disperses them by asking Mr. Cunningham about his son, forcing him to see her as a person. Jem returns to the Radley Place for his torn pants rather than disappoint his father. Boo Radley emerges from years of isolation to save the children from Bob Yule's attack. True bravery often looks unremarkable, choosing principle over comfort, integrity over approval, doing what's right when no one will thank you for it. "Mockingbirds don't do one thing but make music for us to enjoy," Miss Maudie explains. "That's why it's a sin to kill a mockingbird." This metaphor threads through the novel like a melody in a minor key. Tom Robinson embodies this, a kind man who helped Myella Yule out of compassion, only to be falsely accused of rape and shot 17 times during an alleged escape attempt. His fatal mistake was feeling right sorry for a white woman, challenging Maycomb's racial hierarchy more than any act of violence could. Boo Radley is another mockingbird, a gentle soul who leaves gifts for children and mends torn pants in the night, yet remains imprisoned by fear and misunderstanding. When Sheriff Tate protects Boo after Bob Yule's death, Scout immediately grasps the parallel. Exposing Boo would be sort of like shooting a mockingbird, wouldn't it? When Tom's guilty verdict shatters faith in justice, Jem weeps and repeats, "It ain't right," like a prayer that's lost its power. The novel asks us to recognize and protect the vulnerable, those whose only crime is existing outside society's narrow boundaries. those who sing their hearts out and receive bullets in return. In our courts, when it's a white man's word against a black man's, the white man always wins. Atticus's assessment after Tom Robinson's conviction exposes the illusion of blind justice. Despite overwhelming evidence, including the physical impossibility of Tom committing the assault with his crippled left arm, the all-white jury convicts him because accepting a black man's word over a white woman's would shatter Maycomb's racial hierarchy. Multiple justice systems operate simultaneously in Maycomb. The formal legal system maintains a facade of fairness while perpetuating inequality. Social justice grants the Ewells privileges denied to respectable black citizens simply because they're white. Personal justice operates when Sheriff Tate reports that Bob Ewell fell on his knife to protect Boo from scrutiny. Exposing Boo would destroy him as surely as the legal system destroyed Tom Robinson. When institutions fail, individuals must make difficult choices to protect what's right, even if those choices mean bending the very rules designed to ensure fairness. Scout's moral education forms the novel's beating heart. She begins with childish certainty, judging Walter Cunningham's manners and believing Boo Radley monstrous. Atticus teaches her to climb into someone's skin and walk around in it, a lesson that lets her humanize Mr. Cunningham at the jail and eventually see Boo as a shy protector. Her teachers are unexpected. Calpurnia demonstrates code switching, showing that wisdom means knowing what not to say. Miss Maudie exposes religious hypocrisy. Dolphus Raymond reveals his Coca-Cola deception. People prefer simple narratives over uncomfortable truths. The Tom Robinson trial delivers Scout's most profound lesson. From the colored balcony, she witnesses Tom's respectful testimony contrasted with the jury's prejudiced verdict. When Reverend Sykes instructs her to stand as Atticus walks alone, Scout absorbs an unspoken truth. Sometimes doing right means standing alone. By novel's end, Scout literally stands on the Radley porch, seeing her neighborhood from Boo's perspective. This physical shift mirrors her emotional growth. She's learned to see beyond fear and prejudice to recognize our common humanity. When she connects the gray ghost to Boo, Atticus offers the novel's essential truth. Most people are Scout when you finally see them. We mistake loudness for courage and popularity for principle, scrolling past injustice while calling our silence neutrality. But Maycomb shows us differently. Atticus sitting outside a jail with only a newspaper and light bulb, protecting a man the system will fail. A girl dispersing a mob with questions about entailment. Real heroism looks like choosing principle over comfort, again and again, even unwatched. The mockingbirds still sing in shadows, vulnerable to those who mistake difference for danger. Tom Robinson's death proves justice delayed is justice denied. Good intentions without action change nothing. Yet Scout's final insight offers hope. Most people are nice when you finally see them. What mockingbirds exist in your world? Who have you reduced to rumor rather than seeing as human? Stand on that porch. See through those eyes. Because courage isn't a man with a gun. It's choosing empathy over fear, principle over popularity, human connection over comfortable prejudice. That's Maycomb's lesson, uncomfortable and essential as summer heat. The only question, are we brave enough to learn it?